Give me 2 eggs. So tomorrow I got nothing.
Do you believe that everybody should be born poor? 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago. And a year ago, I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of good. And I like it when we had our own bed, different. And when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. All right, welcome to the Without a Roof radio program. Guillermo Mash here. March 7th, big announcement. We're going twice a week, man. There's a lot going on in here in Chico. Some of it good, some of it bad. We'll make sure we sprinkle that together. But starting next week, Monday at 5:30, Wednesday 5 to 5:30. And as always, we enjoy your support of KZFR, your community-powered radio station. All right, man, we got a couple of things I said I was going to give an update on. One was the Torrid's Shelter, who has provided information to what many consider a hate group here, a vigilante hate group, Chico First, as well as posting inappropriate photos of some of their youth clients. And we're going to hear from a professional in the Butte County Office of Ed discussing those pictures. But they've pretty much punted this thing. I really do appreciate that they got back to me rather quickly, the chair of the Torrid's Shelter. But pretty much they punted it over to the COC. I've made complaints for action to both the Greater Chico Homeless Task Force, who basically has denied my request to start a human civil rights group. But they are going to do training, and the Torrid's Shelter is fully supportive of any initiative from the COC. So we're going to drive it through the COC, but I'm going to make sure I continue to have experts on to discuss and hammer home two words I want everyone to remember and not forget: transparency and accountability. Organizations like the Jesus Center and the Torrid's Shelter are asking for transparency for anyone that walks in their door. Empty your pockets. Tell me your whole life story. You're going to be accountable. You're late. You get your butt back out on the street. Right now and right here, I'm going to tell you, we have to start taking what is being given to us of make these people accountable and make these service providers accountable. I'm appalled, actually. I'm going to have to jump off script. Late breaking news, Laura Kutsuna is actually partnered with Chico First as well, as far as I can tell by looking at the Action News hit piece on people actually feeding people in public space. I'm telling you, I'm stunned. This is a typical TV broadcast journalism, sloppy, full of innuendos and woefully off the mark. I think anyone can plainly see that the Jesus Center is anything but a beacon of hospitality. For their executive director to come on and trash Good Samaritans, people providing friendship, hospitality, and food in public spaces, in a B-grade hit piece is a new low for our community. I encourage anyone and everyone to call the Jesus Center and make your concerns known, as well as the Torrid's Shelter. But I can't take any more time. It's just a short show, a half an hour show. But please tune in here. You're going to be hearing from Josh Indar, one of my favorite people in Chico, and Megan Malloy, both from Butte County Office of Ed, talking about something near and dear to my heart: what happens to homeless students and how we can teach and reach them here on People Powered Radio. All right, it's my pleasure to have Megan Malloy, the program coordinator for School Ties, a program of Butte County Office of Education that provides assistance to students experiencing housing insecurity. Welcome to KZFR, Megan Malloy.
Thank you.
And for folks that are longtime listeners, Megan's actually in our theme song, and she is the person that talks about the issue of homelessness and how many homeless youth were in the school systems back in 2014. So let's talk a little bit about privacy and confidentiality and why that's so important in a classroom setting and in a service provider setting, Megan.
I think it's super important to protect the privacy of students experiencing homelessness. For adults, too, but especially for children and for students. I've been doing this at the Butte County Office of Ed for 14 years, and it's been something that we're always very careful to protect. mainly because I've been working with students and talking to students for years, and they really, really don't want other people outing them in their housing status. Sometimes there are students who want to identify as homeless, and it's empowering to them, and it gives them a voice. But otherwise, if it's not their own choice, they do not want to be identified and outed, so to speak.
I always, look at the power dynamics, too. I mean, there was these postings by the Tory shelter. And I mean, if you're a youth, using their services and they come up and say, hey, can we take a picture? The dynamics don't play well in an environment like that, because now you're providing them a place to stay. And there may be this understanding that, I need to do this even if I don't want to, because, well, I've signed away all this stuff. I mean, what do you feel about all that?
Well, I think that's exactly right. Consent, is it really consent when someone feels like, well, my housing may be at jeopardy, if I say no, or I may not get to eat today? So I think it's just a best practice not to use the actual identities and faces of children in any kind of social media posting. And even if they say yes, they may not understand the implications of how many people may be accessing this, how far into the future this could be accessed. So I would recommend, just as a best practice, never doing that.
You know, I was a runaway. They didn't even have the term homeless. And, I didn't want to be identified. That's my identity, as being someone that's homeless. I mean, you're so much more than that. And I think anytime you put these graphics out there to try to incite money or support for an organization, I don't know. To me, it's crossing the line.
I agree, because in the children, they don't fully understand what they may be consenting to. And of course, it's the parent who would consent to use their child's image. But that's not really fair to the child in the long run. And I also think about just this world that we're in now with social media and on the online world. These things never go away. They're out there forever. I mean, we should really take pause with what we're putting out there, because that's just a permanent record. And yeah, it's not fair. It's not fair to the students.
Yeah, we only have a short interview. I mean, and maybe at some point I'll expand upon the journalism I do, and I'm extremely careful. I've used very, very few images of young folks, and used the utmost care for all the reasons that we just described.
Yeah, and I think if sometimes, depending on the age and what the purpose is, it can be empowering.
Yeah.
It can feel great for a student to be given a voice to tell their own story. But that's the key part, is the voice to tell their own story, not someone else telling their story for them or telling personal information about them. It needs to be up to them who knows and how much they know.
Yeah, and for someone, I'll just do a shout out for someone that works with a lot of these service providers. There's no better entity that I've worked with closely than Youth for Change 6th Street. They do an amazing job.
Awesome.
I've signed release forms with them, and they are 100%. They do not talk about their clients, and they put their clients first and foremost. And I think, our listeners and some of the service providers that might be tuning in could learn something from that. Any closing comments, Megan?
Just thank you for making people aware of this and being an advocate for children, and thank you.
School Ties is one of the organizations in the Butte County area that works with students experiencing housing insecurity, homelessness, and they are really the liaison in some ways between services that the districts within the county are legally mandated to provide our students and their families. And Josh runs the tutoring program, has for now
8 or 9 years.
9 years.
Yeah. Actually, I didn't run it for it that long. I started as a tutor, so yeah. 6 years, 7 years, something like that.
All right. Pretty much every semester that I teach this comes generously into not only my class and my section now, but now all the other sections of the faculty that I'm mentoring into the curriculum, and gives of his time, engages with future teachers because of how important your exposure and understanding of the program and some of the issues facing students with housing insecurity.
I always approach them with the idea that I don't even usually work for their school. I work for BCOE. If I go to see a kid at Fairview or whatever, I can say, I have the advantage of saying, I don't work here and I don't work for the school, I work for you. And I do think that that's an attitude. You can't actually say that to a kid when you're a teacher because you obviously work for the school, but you can have that attitude that you don't work for the school, you don't work for the system that's done this to them. You don't, you know, you're not there to represent the larger society. You're just there to help that one kid at that one time. And so that's what I would say as far as taking a, you know, an approach to a kid. Because I mean, you do start to see like authority figures as like someone who's just out to get you. You know, and it doesn't matter really who that figure is. I think that when you get to when you are on the other side of society or you feel like you're on the other side of society, every authority figure looks exactly the same and they're just all out to get you. So breaking that and trying to like take off that like mask of authority is going to be really helpful, where you can just deal with someone as a person and say, I'm not here to cause you any more grief. I just want to help you through this.
It's difficult when, you know, a teacher only sees the problems that are going on and doesn't want to actually help you and address things. They just, you know, like punish you or something for being late and don't ask you like why maybe this is occurring, or like they don't observe the larger patterns, you know. It's frustrating because it feels like they're not being personal. And it's just like you're, like you said, you're in a system, you know.
Yeah. And a lot of classes aren't personal. You see the classes that are, they really stand out and they're really different. I was at a class the other day, and it's part of a school here that's sort of like a last chance type. It's not a continuation school, but it's sort of a hybrid model. And I was really impressed by the teacher because there were some kids acting out, and he was trying to do a lesson. He didn't yell at them, you know. He didn't talk down to them. He just was like, okay, let's all take a, you know. He did this breathing exercise. They still weren't into it, and he's like, you guys, I'll talk to you in a second. He didn't go lecture them. He just was sitting there, like, while the lesson was, someone else took over the lesson. He just talked to them. They were just talking on a picnic bench, just like people do, you know? And he was very understanding. I was really impressed by that. So, you know, you can't just run your class like it's a learning factory or something, you know? The curriculum's important, but the kids are the most important thing. And they're not going to be able to learn if they don't trust you, or if they're, you know, too hungry to concentrate, or if someone, you know, just beat them up in the bathroom over something, you know. And a lot of times, like my experience is, they're not gonna go to you and tell you something. I never went to any of my teachers and said, I'm homeless, I need help. Like, I didn't consider myself homeless at all. We just lived in a little boat, you know. And, you know, I kind of romanticized that at the time. I was like, you know, this is cool. I'm different. I'm like, you know, I'm living an adventurous life, not like all you square kids or whatever, you know. And that was my attitude. And that, you see that a lot of times in people that have like lived these kind of lifestyles, where they're not going to be like, you know, all humble and meek about it. You got to own that. You got to be like, you know, you got to be proud of it, because that's all you got.
So most of the time, obviously, a kid's not really going to tell you, but if you see the signs and you can tell that, hey, this kid's homeless, like, do you let him or her, like, come out about that? Or, like, do you kind of just kind of pry it little by little, hey, you can talk to me if there's anything going on?
Right. I would say little by little. I would say in private, like, you never, ever want to call a kid out for anything like that in front of peers. You know, you can talk to the counselor. A lot of times they know kind of what's going on. And so try to figure out what's up with the parents. Maybe you can reach out to the parents. A lot of times they'll tell you that they just can't get their kid to school because they live in their car and they can't afford the gas, you know, something like that. So definitely little by little. And it also is really dependent on how old the kid is, because once they get to about a certain age, that like seventh, eighth grade, a lot of times they'll start to sort of peel off. If they're in a homeless family, they will oftentimes try to get away from them and they'll be on their own or whatever. So it really does depend on the age. But yes, like little by little, make a relationship with the kid. Don't make that relationship about you trying to save them. Like, that's one of the worst things that you can do. Make that relationship about, you know, that you're a professional and you're an authority in their life, but you are there to help if they need it, you know?
Josh, maybe just a follow-up to that, because this has come up in other classes, especially when we're talking about secondary kids, so middle school and high school, but not always, elementary as well. Sometimes the reason why a lot of young people are experiencing homelessness is because they've been actually kicked out of their homes. And as we get into looking at, we've been talking about the gender spectrum and, you know, young people who identify as gender nonconforming, and then trans kids that are transitioning, or even gay
and lesbian young people are maybe sometimes homeless because they've been rejected from their families. So there's high rates of correlation in terms of that. So in the example that you were just sort of framing for Mario and the rest of us, what might then we do in those cases when we reach out to the family, get a sense that the family is saying, you know, the kid has this many problems, I don't know what to do with them, then where might we go in terms of the next steps?
The practical answer is that we have something called the HEART program here in Butte County, who will help unaccompanied youth. Sometimes that's runaways. Sometimes that means that they were kicked out. So you would want to get in touch with them and make sure that they're trying to support that kid.
The HEART program?
Yeah. Okay. It stands for Homeless Emergency Action Response Team. And they're a great bunch of people. They can even find housing for some of these kids. And they've really, really helped out. But I think what the larger answer is that you need to be aware of these kind of programs. You need to know what's out there for these kids. You know, you can't just open up this can of worms and have no solution for them. So knowing what's out there and knowing that at this point in our society, schools are being asked to do things that are a lot of times social work. We are asking so much of our schools and our teachers. A lot of times, kids and families are not going to get any kind of services. We are feeding these kids. We're comforting these kids. We're trying to keep these kids safe. Now they want us to carry guns, which is a whole nother discussion and a stupid idea. I'm just going to say it. Let's just... that's an incredibly stupid idea. I know that if I had been in school, I would have been the kid that got shot by the teacher, okay? because that's just how it was for me. But yeah, like knowing what programs are out there and getting connected with all of these other resources. There really are resources here for the kids. There's not probably enough of them. But they're out there, and so you need to be aware of them, because sooner or later you're going to have that situation in your class, and you will want to know what to do.
And in addition to HEART, then we also, I mean, in whatever community we're going into, Stonewall Alliance is a national organization. They have a number of weekly group therapy sessions and a lot of resources around helping LGBTQ kids that are homeless because of their status.
Stonewall is another really good one, yeah. Yeah, and that's why we talk about, you know, having a resource pack at your school, or talking to the counselor and seeing if the principal and seeing if someone can come up with something that's just sort of a one stop, so that you're not the only teacher that has access to that information. You know, you want to get it to the top and say, you know, we have these problems in our school and there's these resources out there. Let's let all the entire school know about it so that the kids can get some help.
I work at the Paradise Teen Center, so a lot of those kids are in situations like this, and I mean, we're aware of it. So when you know, should you treat them? Should you like give them special attention, or should you just wait for them to come to you?
Oh, I don't think they're going to come to you. They might. Like I was, for me, I could only just, from my experience, I wouldn't have gone to anyone, and I wouldn't expect a lot of the kids that we work with to. Like I said, I was not really owning up to being homeless, and I didn't think I needed anybody's help, and I didn't trust anyone. Hopefully that's, you know, not the atmosphere in schools that we have today. You know, I think it has gotten better. I think we have like fewer teachers who are just like, oh, you're late, go to the office. You know, that still happens, but like, I think that we're aware that schools are this hub of services. You know, we're supposed to just be educating kids, but we're doing so much more. I don't even remember what the question was. I'm sorry. No, I think that I do remember now. I think that you start a relationship with that kid if you can. You know, you start a dialogue and how are you doing? What's going on at home? Or what did you do last weekend is a good one. You know, if they said their weekend sucked, oh, why? You know, the trailer I'm in is leaking or whatever it is. And you can be like, you know, okay. And take it as they give it. Be empathetic. Don't be like, oh, you poor, whatever. You know, and then just start working on seeing what you can do for that kid. And maybe you can't do anything for that kid, but you can you know, help them with their homework or get them their school programs that can help them and make sure that they are still able to learn and still going to school. Because it's really important that they go to school and have a place to go during the day and to know that there's adults that they can trust. So when I started as a tutor with BCOE, trying to reach out to some of these youth, like, I mean, I was kind of at the 6th Street Center. I knew that all the kids were homeless there, but I didn't know, like, what I was supposed to do because, like, some of them are in school, some of them aren't. They're not always there. My idea was to start this writing workshop where they would write something that's on their mind, and I would give them a donut. And every couple of weeks, I put together a pamphlet, like a zine, is what it's called. What it has all their writing in it, and it's illustrated and it's edited, and it looks really cool. And so everyone who's written for the month, as soon as I come up with the new ones, they're just grabbing them and they're like seeing their, you know, if they get on the front of that thing, they are just like so stoked, you know, like they're, you know, it means a lot to them to that they know that people are hearing them, reading their words, appreciating that they exist, you know, and just like honoring their experience. So I do that every week, and it's been like really great just for me and I think for the kids too. We put out this book. They did a really great reading. People read their pieces from it. There was a lot of tears, a lot of emotion. And it was also a really good thing for the community because when you read through this book, you realize, like, a lot of what you think about, like, homeless kids is this, like, it's this shell around the kid, you know? The kid is just in there being a kid. A lot of the stuff that you'll read in there is, like, about, like, my girlfriend left me, or I like this guy, or, you know, this sort of typical life sucks kind of teenage stuff that probably all of us had thoughts about or wrote about at a certain point. But they're living on the street, you know? Imagine going through your teen years and you don't have all of those supports and comforts. And so that's what's so important to me about this book is showing the community that, like, these are just kids and it's not their fault. And there's nothing weird or wrong about them. It's just the situation that they're in. Writing and journaling is one of the best activities that any kid in a bad situation can do. I mean, I know that, like, that's how I got through it. When I said that I learned more in that library than I did in that whole school, that was the truth. Like, I would read stuff there, I would write about it, I would draw pictures, and I would just get away from everyone. And that was probably the best thing that happened during that period of my school life was just being able to go to that library and just being able to chill out and write. And I continued to write and continued to write. I made a career out of it at one point. I was a journalist. And so, like, writing really, really saved me. And I think that, like, if you can do a journaling project, or if you get kids to write stuff down. The other thing about doing journaling, like, when you first get into a class, a lot of teachers are doing this now. All right, everyone, like, let's settle down, let's write in your journals, and they do it for 5 minutes. Okay, turn those in, and then we start. The teacher reads those. The kids don't really realize it, but the teacher is reading that and going, look at what this kid's going through, you know? And so you really not only get them to process, you get them to open up that way. And that would be another good way to know kind of, like, you know, which kids are in trouble and which kids can use a little extra attention or need hooked up with services or whatever. So I really urge journaling. Some of you might be math teachers, and that's okay too. Math can help in certain things. Yeah, I really encourage the journaling. It's really, really powerful for these kids. And especially, man, if you can do like a little publication in your school, I'm telling you, the kids that see their work in print, they are just over the moon like the rest of the day. You know, you see kids that are just super surly, usually, and then they see their poem or whatever, and they're like, hey, everybody, look, it's so cool. It leads to other things, too. The kids kind of, they come out of their shell a little bit. And the other thing that is cool about the 6th Street Writing for Donuts, like the little zines that I put out, I mean, it kind of becomes this community newsletter in a way. It's not news, but it's like, this is kind of what's going on now with this group of people. This is what they're going through collectively. And they all read each other's stuff. They all pretty much already know each other's business for the most part. But that's different than knowing like what someone's thinking or feeling. And so it really kind of helps create a community with those kids.
Also, a lot of you are asking questions like, how do you approach that kid? Majority of my student population, I'd say well over 80%, are homeless youth. And I honestly don't go and approach a kid directly. I have food in my classroom, right? I get hungry too. I have shampoo and conditioner. I just have it by the door. So if you need to grab something, grab it, you know. When I was at Fairview, I had a couch in my classroom. There's always music playing in my classroom. There's always candle lit. Don't do that. It's illegal. But there's always a candle lit in my classroom. So I try to make it, yeah, I try to make it as comfortable as possible. And they come around, you know, like you, Al Shademan said, you have to gauge the weather in your classroom, right? So you walk in, I shake each of my students' hands when they walk in the door. Every single period, they get annoyed. They're like, God, Miss Wallace, this is annoying. Let me just in the door. But then you see them, you know, you see like this person is having an off day. And then I can say, you know what? You don't actually have to do this. You can put your head down if you need to. If you need a 15-minute nap, I'm good. Like you can do that in my period. So it's not even about like identifying those students. That's really not even the most important thing at all. If you just treat all your students that way, then they come around no matter what. And sometimes they don't come to you and sometimes they do. And that's okay. You know, it's at least you know that you have those resources. Even the smallest things like a pack of Cheez-Its. I had a student stoked that she had a pack of Cheez-Its. Like, this is the best day ever. And that's all she needed. She doesn't have to tell me, hey, I need help. I'm a homeless student. She needs that connection with someone. And that's, they know that they can go to my classroom for that. So just be that teacher on campus, you know, like be that. My door is always open no matter what. I could be in the middle of a meeting. I'll stop a conversation with an adult in a second because I don't actually like adults. I like my students more, right? So I'll stop a conversation with an adult in a second and talk to my kids. That's all they're looking for. So,
well, I guess the comment that I'd want to attach to that is that it was really powerful for me seeing a well-produced video of a local phenomenon, you know? Like, I've seen stuff like this on, like, national scale or something like that. You know, this is the problem in Chicago or whatever. But when it's like, your neighbor, it really becomes moving in a way that it wasn't before for me.
We were really fortunate to get the funding for this video. And the it kind of came from, like, the whole George W. Bush recession, you know, when the economy fell off a cliff. And then a couple of years later, some money started flowing in the schools just to keep people in, just to keep money in the economy, basically. So that was one of the things that we used our share for, because we weren't allowed to hire people. It's like, here's some money, here's a big chunk of money. Like, you can't hire anyone with it. So how are we supposed to provide more services, you know? So this was our idea that we would do something that would be sort of permanent and a legacy of that to try to move forward and try to, it was something that we needed to do anyway, because it's hard to get teachers in one place at one time. It's hard to go out to every single school and try to teach everyone about this, but you can find this on YouTube. And if anyone has any questions, that we at School Ties always get questions about, you know, the rights of homeless students, what schools need to do, all the stuff. And so we always send them this so that they at least know what their federal rights are and how they can help.